What happens when you die?
When you die, you get buried in the ground.
There's no afterlife?
No. It was just one time around.
There is no God. Philosophers and scientists have been saying that for the last 150 years. Can God's existence really be proved or disproved? Find out today on Just Thinking with author and apologist Ravi Zacharias. God seems to be an afterthought in our culture. And why wouldn't he be? For years, our schools have taught that man is a product of chance and that religion arose from man's fear of the elements. So where does that leave us? How can we defend our faith and belief in God against the onslaught of secular philosophy, science, and culture? Let's join Ravi Zacharias for part one of this important series, Why I Am Not an Atheist, as he looks at the dangers of modern philosophies and provides for us an understanding of the truth.
There are many, many arenas in which theism and atheism can be addressed. It can be addressed in rigorous philosophical terms. And I can do that. I have done it. I have written on the subject. But I'll tell you what the problem with that is. It ends up pitting one person's philosophical mind against another person's philosophical mind, and it could end up making absolutely no difference in your life at the end of it. In fact, I have read through some of the most poignant philosophical debates and seen both scholars do extremely well, and at the end of it, it has changed nobody's mind. So how then am I going to come to you to make it relevant and meaningful so that we can interact on it? Let me give you my understanding of philosophy at three levels and tell you what level we will touch. Level number one in philosophy, I consider theoretical levels of philosophical thinking. They are categories of logic, of thought. They deal with formal fallacies, informal fallacies. They deal with the classical proofs of the existence of God and the classical arguments against the proofs of the existence of God and so on. So if you take Thomas Aquinas, you will look at the cosmological argument being defended. If you look at David Hume, you will see him attacking the cosmological argument. So you've got here the theoretical level of philosophy. Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle dealt at that level of thinking. And somebody has said all of Western philosophy is basically footnotes to Plato. So we can deal with it at a theoretical level. But level two is what I call drama, music, novel, and the existential struggle in your imagination. That is level two. It is most intriguing to me that the moral philosophers of the late 18th century were really the romantic poets and the writers. Andrew Fletcher once said, "Let me write the songs of a nation. I don't care who writes its laws." That's level two. And ladies and gentlemen, I want you to be sure in your thinking that when a teenager, be it 13, 14, 15, or for that matter, even when an 11 or a 12-year-old turns on a television set or listens to a country music song or a rock music song or whatever, you can be sure in your mind there is a philosophy being carried in the process and a view of life being espoused by the listener. There is philosophy at level two. Let's not run from it. Level three is when your son or your daughter or a teenager sits across a kitchen table one night and says, "You know, Dad, today when we were in school, we were discussing a moral issue relating to such and such a lifestyle. What do you think about it?" And if the father says, "You know, son, the Bible says from the Apostle Paul's writings in the book of Romans chapter 1 that such and such a lifestyle is wrong," the son is listening to his father and wanting to say, "You know, Dad, when you quote the Bible around this table, it's very effective. But when I quote it at the school, it is completely ineffective." You see what's happening? The father is prescribing a lifestyle at a prescriptive level of level three. when what the son is really saying is, I'm not asking you, Dad, what Romans 1 says. I'm asking you why you believe Romans chapter 1. Because while Romans chapter 1 is plausible in our kitchen table, it is not plausible in the high school and university setting. The plausibility structure changes. When I used to teach courses on philosophy and so on, I said this, always remember to argue at level 1, theory, illustrate at level 2, and apply it at level 3. If you don't go in that sequence, you end up with sheer prescriptivism. You prefer A, I may prefer B, and we end up sort of locking ideas on those differences, not knowing how to arbitrate on what is good and what is bad. Now, obviously, in two lectures, we can't do all three. So what I'm going to do, as was introduced, the social and personal implications, I'm going to come at it from level 2. With that in mind and a pattern with which we'll be following, let me give to you a fundamental response that I have entitled, Why I Am Not an Atheist. And it is basically a point form response to Bertrand Russell's book, Why I Am Not a Christian. Bertrand Russell wrote that many, of course, in his debate with the Jesuit priest, Father Copleston. I'm not going to deal with the debate. I'm going to just give to you my response on the four existential struggles of life for which Russell has no answer, and he in so much admitted it in some of his other essays. Now, here it is. The question then arises, may we define our terms? Atheism comes from literally the Greek Alpha, the negative, and theism, the word theos, for God, negative, God. There is no God. That's what the word atheism really means. It is not saying, I do not think there is a God. It is not even saying, I do not believe there is a God. It is affirming the non-existence of God. It affirms a negative. Now, you know, we don't need to take too long into that because anyone with an introductory course in philosophy recognizes that it is a logical contradiction. How can you affirm a negative in the absolute? It would be like me saying to you, there is no such thing as a white stone with black dots anywhere in all of the galaxies of this universe. The only way I can affirm that is if I have unlimited knowledge of this universe. So to affirm an absolute negative is self-defeating, because what you are saying is, I have infinite knowledge in order to say to you there is nobody with infinite knowledge. Atheism as a system is self-defeating. Bertrand Russell recognized that, so he did a quick two-step on it. He moved to agnosticism. And agnosticism is very easy to defend. All you got to prove is that you don't know. Now, let me clarify the point. It is foolish to say, I know that you can't know. That is also self-defeating. But there are many honest agnostics who will say, look, I have honestly studied the subject on hand, and I am convinced with the evidences that I have studied and the philosophical issues that I have wrestled with, I don't believe it is really possible to know with certainty if there is a God. Now, that is a different and a respected type of position. I meet many honest agnostics in my travels who will say to me, on the basis of my studies, an honest evaluation of that data on hand, I don't believe it is possible to really affirm the existence of God, and I move along with that type of soft agnosticism. One of my professors of philosophy used to tell this classic story about a fellow who woke up one morning and said to his wife, I believe I am dead. And his wife said, you know, that's a strange sense of humor. It's all right. Just go on to work and bring the paycheck home type of thing. And sent him on his merry way. But this impression in his mind lingered for far too many hours. Every evening he'd come back and munching on his goodies, on his lazy boy there, would say, you know, I really think I'm dead. Finally, his wife and his children decided he needed help. If he didn't get help, they would need some help. So they sent him along to a team of doctors and psychiatrists, all of whom were trying to help him without success, till one doctor latched on to this idea to try to establish for him empirically that only living people bleed. And he was trying to deny that. But they brought all kinds of evidence, overhead projectors, charts, and all the data on hand. Only living people bleed. Only living people bleed. Finally, this man, after all of the evidence was weighed in, said, "All right, I guess I'm going to have to admit to you that only living people bleed." As soon as he said that, one on the med team of doctors there took a pin and plunged it into this man's veins, and the blood came spurting out, and he looked at it and said, "Great Scott, I guess dead people bleed too." Do you realize that in many ways that man was really dead? Because from all vantage points of evidence, there was nothing you could bring to get him to change his mind. I think it was Richard Weaver who taught English literature at the University of Chicago for years. And I encourage you to read his book, because 40 years ago he wrote a book entitled Ideas Have Consequences. And Alan Bloom, who now teaches philosophy there, 40 years later has written The Closing of the American Mind. And frankly, it is almost based on the text and context of Richard Weaver. And Richard Weaver said this many, many years ago: nothing good can come if the will is wrong. And to give evidence to him who loves not the truth is only to give him more plentiful material for misinterpretation.
Thank God we have a belief system that is based on truth. Truth that builds and does not destroy. As you can tell, Ravi Zacharias has a strong desire to present the truth. And nowhere can that desire be seen more clearly than in his series, Why I Am Not an Atheist. If you share Ravi's desire to communicate truth and would like to order a copy of this series to review or to share with a friend, call us at 1-800-448-6766 and request the message, Why I Am Not an Atheist. Again, that number is 1-800-448-6766. You can also order a copy of this message or any of our other resources from our website at rzim.org. In addition to the items available for purchase, you'll also find an abundance of articles, links, and audio downloads that are absolutely free. Check it out next time you're online at rzim.org. Just Thinking is a listener-supported radio presentation of Ravi Zacharias International Ministries. Our mailing address is RZIM, Post Office Box 921-939, Norcross, Georgia, 30010. Finally, have you ever found yourself stumped in a conversation with an atheist? Then you'll definitely want to tune in tomorrow as Ravi Zacharias gets into the meat of his defense of God's existence in part two of this important teaching series. Until then, keep thinking.